Welcome to Not Another TV Lawyer.
I'm Chris Shakib.
I'm Jessica Hall.
And this is a podcast sponsored by the law firm Terrell Hogan that's been in Jacksonville for greater than 50 years.
And we are very passionate about helping people and personalizing our service to help them get the service they deserve.
Hello, it's Chris Shakib and Not Another TV Lawyer. And today our guest is Nate Evans, who has a different perspective on people who've been in crashes, auto crashes, and have been injured. It's a very important part of what an attorney handling cases for people who've been injured in auto crashes has to consider, because, you know, our goal is to try to get recoveries for our clients. And so we focus on that. But then once you do get the recovery, whether it's by a pre-suit settlement or a hard-fought case that goes to trial, you can't just leave them to their own devices. Depending on their level of experience with money, you know, to say, all right, here it is. And so that's what Nate does, is he helps people who are getting a recovery so
they can make smart decisions with their money.
Right. And so I'll leave it to him. Nate, I appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me, can you explain what exactly you do?
Well, we do a very particular specialized subset of financial planning called settlement planning. And it involves the use of a bunch of different financial products and resources that are designed specifically for injured people. The one thing that I think is different in their situation is that they've gone through this long process, right? It's very confusing. It's time consuming. They're not the expert. They're not in control. And they've sort of got to the point where there's the light at the end of the tunnel, and they're trying to identify all of the different things that they're going to need in the future. And so there's a whole host of different financial products that address those things specifically in a tax advantage or an asset protected way that gives them some stability and some surety as they transition to life after the litigation process.
All right. Tax advantage. I know that's one of the big things. When we have a personal injury recovery, when we're doing our closing statement and we're listing out, all right, here's the total settlement, here are the attorney's fees, here are your expenses, here's paying back to the extent that it's involved health insurance or any outstanding balances with medical providers, and here's what you get. We don't take tax. That's not a taxable thing. We don't have to take any tax out of that. But so I assume you're not talking about the tax like that we would take out of a settlement if there was sales tax or some kind of tax. But what tax are you talking about as far as tax advantages?
There's a provision in the IRS tax code that is specifically carved out where if someone receives damages on account of a personal physical injury, physical sickness or illness, then that those damages are excluded from gross income. So that means that the IRS more or less views those as maybe a replacement of human capital and not necessarily income that someone would receive like wages from working or an award like a lottery winning.
Right. My understanding is the reason they treat it that way is because the clients who are getting money, they're not actually getting ahead. They're actually being brought back to where they would have been, but for the injury and the crash or whatever it was that led them to be there. So it's not extra income. It's really just leveling back to where they should have been. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. The other piece of that, too, is that a lot of times because they've been injured or maybe they've lost a loved one, well, now moving forward, they might be placed at a disadvantage or they might have some kind of recurring expense associated with the recovery or the lawsuit, like medical needs. Where every single dollar from that settlement really matters a lot, and it's important to them.
Right. So you've got, for instance, let's say it's a catastrophic injury where the person, you know, maybe is paralyzed, a paraplegic, and they're going to have medical care. And so in cases like that, we'll have a special expert called a life care planner put together a life care plan, which involves all right, what are all the different expenses, medical expenses, and everything from rehab and maybe in-home care and all that. And we'll put that together and have a life care plan. And that's part of our presentation to either a jury if we're in trial or to the other side if we're trying to negotiate a settlement. Those numbers are built into hopefully what the recovery is. And then, you know, you get the recovery for the client, and then what? How does that work? Is that where you kind of come in?
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, there's certain vehicles like a structured settlement where someone can choose to receive some of their money in cash and then some of the money is paid out over a period of time. You know, those are that's a vehicle that has to be included in the settlement terms.
Right. Because there's an important point of the structure, which is, you know, that for it to work, the money can't actually come into the client can't get the money for it to work. Is that right?
They can't take constructive receipt of it.
Yeah.
And an agent acting on their behalf, the lawyer, also cannot take constructive receipt of the funds, because then, you know, I think the IRS sort of views that as someone having control over those funds and being able to direct them and manage them, even if they may not be able to. So avoiding constructive receipt is a big part of what we do when we're looking at a structured settlement.
And, you know, in my experience, that means that you can't think about these kinds of things after the settlement. You know, for instance, if you've settled and they've sent you the check, it's too late. You as the attorney now have possession, which means your client has possession, and you can't get the benefit of that. And so, in my experience, you know, these are not the types of things that we as the attorney representing someone who's injured should only think about after the settlement. We have to plan these things well in advance, get someone like you involved, and start planning with the client, you know, so that they understand what's going on and they're making the decisions. Because, you know, if you wait too long, it's too late.
Right. Well, you sort of hit on something that's really important there. I think that, you know, when someone has gone through this long process and then all of a sudden in the 11th hour, you show them something that may be in their best interest, that may have a significant benefit to them. But perhaps their mindset is that, oh, I need to take care of X, Y, and Z. Oh, I have all of these other things. I don't want to deal with that. Just give me the cash. You know, then that's, it's a timing thing that maybe was too late. So the earlier, the better. And one sort of thing that I've noticed is that some of the top tier law firms and the successful lawyers like yourself and other folks at your firm, when they're talking to clients about these things early, it's really a difference maker between them and other firms. Because if you can show someone, okay, if the insurance company only has policy limits to this amount, there's other tools that we have that might be able to help grow this money for you in a safe way, to give you more money for these things that we expect you're going to need in the future. So it's a way to attract and add value to the client, I think, when you're having those initial conversations.
Right. I've found that if we wait to even right before settlement, it's too late, particularly because if you give a client the option of, all right, I'm not going to get all the money at once in a structured settlement, which I'll ask a few more questions about. But, it, you know, either take the cash up front or have it paid out over time in a way that could potentially be more money. If you wait to the end, they're always going to say, I want the money. And that's just human nature. But if you start talking about that in advance, because you're trying to get them to realize that this isn't, you know, this settlement sounds like a lot of money, But it's not income. You know, it's a settlement, particularly in a lump sum, is a one-time thing that, you know, is amazing how fast it can go. I've had clients that, you know, they get and I'll talk about a case I had when I was younger before I learned better. You know, they build up in their mind what the recovery is going to be, and they're, you know, as no matter how long it takes, they start planning on how they're going to spend it. For instance, the worst, the thing that I beg everybody not to do is go out and buy a new car right after the settlement, which is to me, the worst thing you can do, unless you need a car and there's a good purpose for it. You know, I just hate that. That's one of the things I beg them not to do. But what happens, and they'll have these things in their head, and then you try to recommend a structure at the last second, and they say, give me the cash. They get the cash. And then, you know, I hear back, I call the client, you know, maybe three months later, and the money's gone. And they said, you know, Chris, I don't know what happened. I don't have any money left now. What can we do? And you got your recovery. You signed a release. The case is over. We can't go back.
Yeah.
Tell me the structure where you're not ever getting you're not getting at least all or a part of the settlement. Is that, you can do it either way. You can have all the money from a settlement, or
you can have a mix. You know, we'll often see different amounts. You know, some people may need a lot of cash. You know, if they need to buy a new home or make home modifications for
their injuries,
right? For a disability, handicap ramps. You know, the Hoyer lifts, you know, different types of accessible things. You know, cash is a big piece of it. I think when you have all of the money structured, unless it's a minor child or something that you're trying to protect and preserve the money for them when they become an adult, very rarely do we see all of the money structured. There's always a cash component to it, which is an important piece.
I've found that if you don't do it that way and have all of it in a structure, you know, you end up locking out, you know, the client ends up being,
they feel rebellious,
having this recovery, but they can't access it. And when they actually have legitimate needs, they're out of luck. And then they might resort to some things like selling their interest in the structure, which is possible. You know, I had a case years ago. All my bad stories are from years ago before I learned what not to do. I had a case with a minor, and her mother was very worried that her daughter would not be mature even after she reached the age of 18. And so she set up the structure so none of the money would be payable until after she turned 25. And you know, then so no money was recovered, you know, in the immediate future. The client, the woman, the client, the girl who became a woman, you know, she turned 18 and she and her mother kind of, you know, stopped talking to each other. She came to my office, wanted to know how she could get her money. I said, I don't control it. It's in a structured settlement. You're going to get it, but it's not coming till you're 25. I said, well, that's not fair. I'm an adult. I want my money. And I don't know what to tell you. And so I would hear from her, you know, every, like once a year, you know, when she'd come back saying, you know, I want my money and I can't get it. And finally, she went to one of these companies that advertise, you know, do you have a settlement? And she sold. And she sold it at a rate that just was highway robbery. She got some cash out of it, and you know, before I knew it, she'd gone through it, and she even, you know, tragically died, you know, with some bad people that she was hanging out with. And I felt like if her mother and I had brought her into the mix from early on and planning what we were going to do, she would have had some more buy-in. And I don't know. That's one of those things that I think about that client and what happened, and I just think we could have done better. And so I never want to be in that situation again. What would you say? How do you avoid that kind of pitfall?
Well, that's hard. Because when a child's, 14, they're younger, it's really hard to anticipate exactly every expense that they're going to need or how they're going to develop over those next, few years. I mean, even at age 18 or 22, 23, their brain isn't fully developed yet. And so it's hard to give them the perspective and the insight at a really young age. But I agree with you in that the buy-in piece is very important. I speak to a lot of parents whose children have been in accidents or maybe have suffered an injury. And I always like seeing that those children are copied on the emails or they're included in the conversation or they come to us on our conference calls and they have questions of their own. And I think that's a really important thing because when you try to control the entire process, especially something that they feel is theirs, then you're going to have maybe some rebellion. You're going to have something there that maybe they have a different perspective where they don't fully understand exactly why this is there and what it can do for them. And so I do think that the planning piece should include them. And I think that that's something that will give them a greater respect for what they have later on.
So talking about what we're calling structured settlement, how does that work? Why is it that the money has to not come into, in the control of my client, the injured person, or me even, who's the representative of the injured person? What's going on? How does that work? What's the, where is the money going when we say a structured settlement?
We can get really complicated into the weeds about how the whole process works.
Right.
A structured settlement in and of itself is some of the recovery that's paid over a period of time. It could be as a lump sum out into the future, or it could be a series of periodic payments. The way that that's set up is that the insurance company pays the money, goes into the structured settlement.
And it's an annuity, right?
Sometimes. An annuity is the most common funding asset. We also see, especially now since COVID and the downturn in 2008, we've seen a whole host of market-based products that have popped up that use trusts and they use other things, but essentially the money flows from the insurance company or the self-insured defendant, and it goes to an assignment company who accepts that obligation to make those future periodic payments that are spelled out in the settlement terms.
Okay.
Then they purchase the funding asset, from a highly regulated and rated life insurance company, or in a market-based product, it flows through a trust.
And now, when you say market-based, you mean like the stock market?
It could be. Yeah.
Or the real estate market or something.
It could be, right. And so the key difference, I think, between the two is that the market-based options are not guaranteed. They're built to be very secure,
right,
but they don't have the guarantee on them that the traditional structured settlement products do.
Like the annuity.
Correct, right.
But is it, the bottom line is this money is being invested to where it's not just a lump sum, or it's not even just in, you could get the money, put it in even a savings account, and there's some return, but isn't the goal of the structure to be able to make more than just a small, percentage of interest you'd get in a savings account,
right,
and to do better.
Right. Yes. When the money goes to the life insurance company or the trust company, they accept the risk of the investment. The injured person can offload some of that risk to them. Then they promise a future payment or a series of payments in the future that are designed to be more than what initially goes into the structure.
And is the tax advantage the gain on that investment, the plan is that money is going to make money. And then because of the setup to where it never comes into the possession of the injured client, then even though it's more than what they settled for, they're not going to be taxed like they would if on a capital gain.
Correct.
If they had
right.
their own investment that they already owned and it made money. Is that right?
Yes. And that relates back to your question about the constructive receipt. And so if they don't have control over it and they don't own it, they only own the right to receive those payments, well, then all of that growth is not taxed as well. So if you consider for a moment, maybe a child that suffered a birth injury and they have significant medical expenses. Maybe they have a need for 24/7 attendant care or assisted living needs. You know, those expenses over their lifetime are going to be significant. And so, you know, if you forecast that over a life expectancy of 70 or 80 years, you know, not having to pay taxes on that growth, not having to pay, you know, in some instances, not having to pay a management fee, you know, or an investment fee like you would pay with another advisor, that's really just more money that goes into their pocket. And so I think, you know, to the important point of what you just asked is that oftentimes I've thought that one of the most saddest things about, you know, sort of what we do is that when someone receives a big chunk of money, it's, you know, you hear two things. The first thing is, how much are you going to get? And then the follow-up story is, where did it all go wrong? And so these things are designed to sort of mitigate some of that risk. I mean, they have the cash component that can address those unforeseen needs, you know, give them some liquidity, things like that. And for the injured person, what this all this technical stuff that we've been talking about, what it really boils down to is, you're going to receive X number of dollars every so often for this period of time. It's a very clear and transparent thing that you know, you don't have to be a highly educated person to understand. You know, you don't have to take courses in finance. It's sort of the same as having a car payment where you know you're going to have to pay $500 a month for 60 months and it's going to, you know, work out to this much. It's sort of like that.
But instead it's the reverse, where you're going to get $500 a month or whatever it is.
Right. And so that transparency, I think, is an important thing for a lot of these people. And it gives them peace of mind to know, hey, no matter what else goes on with the cash and the rest of the money that I have, I always have this money to fall back on. And I always know it's going to be there.
Right. When I think of that, I think of a story of another former client from back when I was younger. We had a case with this woman who was injured really badly in a car accident. And there was a limited amount of coverage. I think it was like $100,000. I tried the case and we got an excess verdict. And I actually ended up settling above the policy limits of $100,000. With the malpractice carrier for the defense attorney because of the way they tried to. Anyway, it's complicated, but I got this woman, you know, a much larger recovery than she would have. And it was a long process. You know, we had to go all the way to trial, get a verdict. Then there was an appeal. And while it was on appeal, you know, we had more than one mediation. And, you know, she's just ready. And once we finally got the money, you know, I begged her, do not buy a car. And she bought a car. And the next thing I heard, I, you know, within a few months, she had actually been just bombarded by acquaintances or distant relatives who heard she had some money and wanted some help. And you know, they were hounding her so much that she ended up hurting herself. She was so stressed out by the whole thing that she hurt herself and had to be involuntarily committed for a little while, you know, in a Baker Act situation. And it was really sad. And I learned, you know, the hard way that when you have clients like that, the education has to start well in advance. And one of the parts of the education is don't tell anybody.
That is the number one thing that we discuss when we have settlement conferences. And then even into the point leading up to the settlement conferences, listen, if you get any money, don't discuss it with anybody. Don't post it anywhere. This is for you. Like, that's a conversation I have on a regular basis.
I mean, that is one of several cases that I think about, you know, and that I wish we had done it differently. And I, you know, and unfortunately, that's what happens when you're younger and trying to learn. But, you know, what I like about the structure is it keeps the client from being
protects
his or her own worst enemy.
Right. Protects them from themselves.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you know, when I was younger, we had a friend of the family that received a lump sum, and you know, it's not a whole lot in today's dollars, but it was a lot back then. It was six figures, and you know, as a kid, you know, I watched the check was delivered around, you know, noon, around 5 p.m. There was a limo pulled up with five of her friends that I'd never seen before. One of them's hanging out the sunroof, you know, of the limo with a champagne bottle. And they're ready to go to dinner and dropped a couple $1,000s on the dinner. The next day, you know, they went and purchased a new car, you know, and over a course of a few months, you know, I saw these friends come to the house, and they had all these things that were just going wrong in their life, or they had these business opportunities that were a surefire way to make some money. They just needed her money, mm-hmm. to address these things. And within 10 months, all the money was gone. You know, that the car got repossessed. And really it was a fun ride, you know, for her for a little while, but that was life-changing money. And it could have made a big difference.
But it did make a big difference. It just made a big difference and a negative impact because right. She didn't monitor it and
right.
handle it.
And I think that's one of the really powerful things about, you know, a structured settlement is that not only does it protect people from themselves and making, you know, poor purchases or a lot of purchases in a small amount of time, but you know, I think it also gives people the ability to say no when they need to and not feel bad about it.
Right. Right. That's what I felt like I had not done for my client, the woman who, you know, got bombarded by people asking for money.
So if they were not our client and someone wanted to contact you about a structured settlement, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, they can call me directly. You know, most times we work through the attorneys. And so if they're about to receive a settlement, you know, and they just want more information or they want to see what the numbers might look like, you know, then they should have their attorney reach out to us, because of the way that it's all sort of put together, it has to be included as part of the settlement. If they're on, you know, Medicaid or receiving supplemental security income,
there's certain that, provisions for that as
right,
well.
You know, well, then we need to look at protecting those.
Right. Too, and so. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, again, going back to my early days, going back to those days, I worked, the first firm I worked for out of the state attorney's office, you know, it was just about get the money, turn it over quickly. And I was so young, I just thought they knew what they were talking about. But, you know, someone who's on Medicaid, which is a needs-based type of government program, or there are other government needs-based things where it's based on the fact that you are lower income.
You have a financial need for those programs.
And what is the risk of getting money if you're in Medicaid or some other type of needs-based program?
Well, the risk is that they'll lose those benefits. Now, they do have ways to protect those, to receive the settlement and continue to receive those benefits. But again, that takes some planning. And that's conversations that we have every day with different clients.
Right. So, like, For Medicaid, to qualify for Medicaid, you can't have a certain amount of assets. And if you get
resources, right,
it automatically disqualifies you and you're out of luck. And it's like that. So what I've done learning over years was, you know, we talk about a special needs trust. Is that the vehicle that you use?
It's one of the vehicles. Yeah, that's on more complicated cases. I would say special needs trusts are used more often. There's also an ABLE account. An ABLE account has some limitations to it, but does give some flexibility where a trust can't. But yeah, those are probably the two biggest vehicles that we see.
And and the great thing is if you plan in advance, you know, you're not, you know, and I think it's malpractice for those of us to do this, is just leave our clients in the cold and not care about the consequences. I think that, you know, we always have to talk about what they have. I have a questionnaire we use for, you know, for clients to, all right, do you have any new insurance? Are you getting any special benefit, government benefits or things like that? I mean, if you wait till the last minute for these things, it's never good.
Right.
Well, we appreciate you being our guest on our podcast today.
Appreciate you having.
And what's the best way if someone wanted to get in touch with you, Nate?
How would their attorney get a hold of you?
Sure, but my phone number is 904-864-3600, and my email is nevins@teamarcadia.com.
Okay. Great. We really appreciate you being here.
Thank you both.
Thanks again for listening to Not Another TV Lawyer. We hope that you will tune in to the next episode.
Not Another TV Lawyer is sponsored by my law firm, Terrell Hogan Law. Terrell Hogan represents people in a lot of different areas of injury type law, as well as business claims throughout the state of Florida. We represent people in auto accidents, trip and falls, people who have been exposed to asbestos and developed conditions related to that. Victims of medical negligence, victims of defective products, including medical devices and pharmaceuticals.
Please feel free to look us up at www.terrellhogan.com. We look forward to hearing and being with you soon.